history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, the stories are there, and taking the time to search them out always proves worthwhile for those of us with the privilege of listening to the stories, and also for those who summon the courage to share them. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And boy, do we learn a lot. We are educated, we're entertained, so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This weekend marks the 78th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, so you probably guessed that would be the focus of this episode. Dozens of Pearl Harbor survivors have shared their memories here on Hometown Heroes over the years, representing many different ships and many different military installations around Oahu. Sadly, most of the Pearl Harbor survivors we've met on this program are no longer with us, but I want to focus today on four of them who are, and who all have some 2019 updates to their stories, even some this weekend updates. So much of the attention every December 7th ends up on the battleship USS Arizona, which suffered the greatest loss of life 78 years ago and still rests in the harbor as one of the most moving memorials you'll ever have the chance to visit. Last year marked the first time that not a single USS Arizona survivor was able to attend the commemoration ceremonies at Pearl Harbor. This year, there are only three members of the Arizona's crew still alive, and one of them will be at Pearl this year for a very special reason. 98-year-old Lou Conter received a hero's welcome when he landed in Honolulu this week, complete with a water arch and a red carpet. On this 78th anniversary, Lou is participating in the interment of his shipmate, Lauren Bruner, who passed away in September. Bruner, like many other Arizona survivors, chose to have his remains added to those shipmates who've been entombed on the ship since 1941. Lou Conter will be there in person, and the other two remaining survivors from the Arizona, Ken Potts of Utah and Don Stratton of Colorado, will of course be there in spirit. One of the items I have linked for you this week at hometownheroesradio.com is a video about the connection between Stratton and a 7-year-old boy in North Carolina who became fascinated with the story of Pearl Harbor. I hope you'll check that out, as well as Don Stratton's book. At age 97, Don is still going strong in Colorado Springs. He is the last survivor among a group of six men who escaped the burning ship thanks to Joe George, a sailor who disobeyed an order and tossed a line from the nearby USS Vestal to the spot where Don and his fellow sailors were trapped.
My battle station was a sight setter in the port and aircraft guns on the port side, and that was up about 55, 60 feet in the air on the tripod mast on the foremast.
And people hear you say that, and maybe some of them have already read your book, All the Gallant Men, or they've seen one of your interviews or heard you before, but when people imagine that morning and they think about you being in that position, that many feet in the air with these Japanese planes coming in and bombs dropping, I'm sure they say, how in the world did you survive? You ever wonder that yourself?
Well, it had to be a lot of to do with the good Lord, I guess, and but we were kind of trapped up there. We got out of the director and on the deck there, and the vessel was alongside a repair ship, and we got a hold of a seaman there that threw us a heaving line with that's a line with a lead on the end to stretch it out, and they small line, and then he added a big, heavier line, and we pulled that across, and we tied it off on the Arizona, and we started hand over hand across it, and we were already burnt. I was burned like over 60% of my body, I guess, at that time.
How did that occur? You were in that position on the foremast when the big explosion happened?
The bomb that hit on the starboard side behind number two turret went into a million pounds of ammunition, and it blew up. It just was a fireball that just engulfed us up there where we were at, and no way to escape or get off. So until we got the line there to go hand over hand across, we're kind of just stymied up there, and we finally got off. Six of us went across there.
But I'm just trying to imagine what those moments were like when you're engulfed in flames and your flesh is burning and you're trapped and you can't go anywhere. What do you do?
you're just trying to get out away from the flames and thinking about how the hell am I going to get out of here.
So if that seaman hadn't had that idea to tie that line.
Well, we kind of indicated that we wanted to get off of there, and he throwed us a heaving line, which is a small line, and then tied on the heavier line, and it was about probably 65, 70 feet across there, and we had to go hand over hand across there.
So already you said 60%+ of your body had been burned. So is that upper body, lower body?
Well, the whole body, everything.
But your hands were okay?
My hands were burnt. I don't even have any fingerprints.
Well, was that from the explosion or was that from going down that line?
That was both.
So your hands are burnt, and then you have to hold on to a line or else you're going to fall to your death.
Right.
With hands that are already burnt, and I can't imagine what that feels like, the pain that you must have been experiencing. Or did adrenaline take over?
Well, it's just self-preservation.
So you get down to that other ship, the Vestal, which is next to the Arizona. I've interviewed a couple guys who were on that ship, and they've described what your ship looked like. But once you got aboard on the Vestal, there's still a lot going on, probably. What did you see from there?
Well, we stood around there for quite a while. The Vestal was busy with firing their guns and whatever and trying to get away from the side of the Arizona and the explosion. And they finally got us in the shore boat and took us to the beach, and they picked us up in an open-air truck and took us to the hospital.
And how long were you in the hospital?
A year.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. Wasn't quite that long. It was like till the next September.
And I'm sure, well, I've read some of your story. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to understand how you experienced it. So very few people alive experienced what you experienced. You're in all this pain, and you know you're going to recover. But was it a daily basis in those days that followed that you were learning of other guys that you knew from the ship who didn't make it?
Well, we most certainly figured that, but there was a few ex-sailors in the hospital with us and everything, so but we knew we'd suffered a devastating hit and a lot of casualties, but it took a lot of baths, saltwater baths, and a lot of healing and a lot of patience.
Yeah, where did that come from? You're a pretty young guy. You haven't been through a whole lot until this.
Well, you do what you have to do.
Did your parents know you were alive, or did that take a while?
No, they got a notice that I didn't make it, and then they got a notice that I did. But they sent us back to Mare Island Hospital and went through a lot of baths, a lot of skin grafts, a lot of time laying. They put us on a bunk and put a canopy over the top of us and covered the canopy with a blanket and put light bulbs in the canopy to keep us warm. Kept the burns open to the healing air. I wanted to go back into the Navy, so I went back after I was home for about a year, and my whole left side healed up really much from the medical discharge. So I re-enlisted and went back in, and they put me on I went to boot camp again because it hadn't caught up on my shots and stuff, and I went to island there in the bay, and they put me aboard a destroyer, DD-406 USS Stack. We headed for the South Pacific right away, and we were in on the invasion of the whole land in New Guinea and a couple of islands offshore there, and we went to Guadalcanal and picked up troops to put in the Philippines and the Lady, and we were in the Battle of Leyte Gulf, and we were in the Battle of Luzon Gulf, and we led all the invasions in with the mine sweeps, and finally Okinawa, and we were on pick of a patrol 300 miles north of Okinawa between there and Japan, and for the kamikazes coming down, and let them know down below that they were on their way, and that was kind of hazardous. We lost 5 ships one night there, and they sent me back to the States, and the war was over, and I had a game.
And I understand that you lived that, and that you've told your story many times. So that is, in a way, old hat to you. But you do understand how crazy that sounds to most people, right? That you were burned over the majority of your body. You still don't have any feeling in your fingers that you haven't had for 75 years. You're recovering for a year in the hospital. You've been medically discharged. But you sign up to go back, and you end up fighting the rest of the war. Why? Why was that so important to you?
Well, it's just one of those things that happens, I guess. Felt like maybe I should be there, but whatever happened, but that's the way it worked.
And the title of your book is All the Gallant Men, and you're honoring those who died December 7th and really the 406,000 Americans who died in the war. But it strikes me that just that action you took, I mean, you are the gallant man. Did you feel that you were doing something beyond what was asked of you?
No, the heroes were still out there.
Still on your ship.
Yep.
What'd your parents think when you re-enlisted?
Well, actually, they didn't want me to go, but they said if that's what you're made up your mind to do, it's your life to live. It's just the thing that surprise attacked and didn't get a chance to fight back too much, so I was still in the same predicament. I loved the Navy, and so I went back in. Like I tell everybody, everybody had to be someplace, and I was there.
And one of only three still with us who were there on the USS Arizona on December 7th, 1941. Don't forget to go to hometownheroesradio.com for the video of Don Stratton with his new friend, 7-year-old Landon Nestrick, to whom Don entrusted a piece of the ship he had long kept in his home. That relic is now on display at Landon School in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's another video I have linked for you online that I don't think you'd ever see coming. Wally Walling has been back to Pearl Harbor many times, but this year he's marking the 78th anniversary in Lodi, California. I'm going to tell you why in a moment, but first let's hear a little of what Mr. Walling remembers about that fateful morning from his unique vantage point of an observation tower that still stands at Pearl Harbor.
It's a beautiful day, and all at once, overhead, we've got planes, high planes, low planes, all coming in on us. Oh, must be a big maneuver today. Those orange balls up there is not ringing the bell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing the bell even when we see those black objects dropping out of those planes.
It hasn't hit you yet that this is enemy.
That isn't it. Mm-hmm. And when the bomb went off on Fort Allen, and all the planes are exploding everywhere, we know we're in war.
And you saw that, clear as day.
I watched it all. I'm the only one that can tell you the Pearl Harbor story, and this is the reason why. I'm looking down on everything. You're on a ship. Mm-hmm. And that ship gets hit by a torpedo or what? Who sees that? The ship itself. That's all. They can't see beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking down on everything. But remember this, you can't see it all at one time because everything's blowing up at one time.
Right.
So you can't even follow it.
Mm-hmm.
All you can just pick up in pieces. See?
Well, and that's what, you know, on this program over the years, I've heard from guys who are on a lot of different ships or on land while this is happening, and they have those little slivers of the puzzle that they saw from their perspective. And your perspective is intriguing, and what you're saying is you're the last guy left that was in that tower and looking from that spot where you could see each one of these things that's happening. You're, what, 19, 20 years old?
19.
What in the world was going through your head?
I'm froze to the rail because the first thing that happened just before the plane started dropping. It was Hickam Field is blowing up. It's right behind me. I'm looking, maybe a couple minutes or something before the raid started right over Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So Hickam Field is destroyed immediately. Now I'm froze to that rail because I have joined the greatest Navy of all times. And here it is, being blown up in my face in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm devastated. Because if they can do that in 10 minutes, what else is coming?
Right.
And scuttlebutt is everywhere. They've already landed on the other side, and, oh, man, you don't know what to believe.
I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff, and I want to hear about that, but I hope I didn't cut you off in describing what you saw there in the order you saw it. So you saw those explosions on Fort Island.
See, the Arizona never blew up till 8:06. It's the last ship that blew up because your California sunk, Oklahoma's rolled over, the Utah's rolled over,
mm-hmm.
and the West Virginia's got hit by at least 7 torpedoes. It's a mess. It went straight down.
And you're seeing each one of these?
I'm seeing it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot possibly see it because you're looking there, a bomb went off, one's already gone there. You're looking and seeing after the fact. We can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way of us doing a thing.
You can imagine how helpless a feeling that would be. For decades now, Wally Walling has shared his story, trying to educate others about Pearl Harbor and the importance of keeping America alert. He published his memoirs last year. I have those linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, in addition to his complete original interview. But now he is marking the 78th anniversary at a special lighting ceremony in Lodi, California, where the owners of All Save Energy, the Hamilton family, have made Wally the centerpiece of their annual Christmas light display. They took measurements to produce an accurate likeness, and with more than 10,000 lights, 5,000 zip ties, and 6,000 feet of rebar, they have constructed a 60-foot-tall Christmas light statue of this Pearl Harbor survivor. Wally has always had a larger-than-life presence, but this Pearl Harbor Day and this holiday season, that presence is larger than ever. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come, including the story of one survivor who is back on Oahu this weekend, 78 years after he says a childhood lesson saved his life. Find out what he means by that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.